Hey, Mr. Anka, pleasure to meet you.
You call me Paul and you'll really meet me.
Wow, all right, cool. Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Paul Anka, who will be coming to Strathmore on Saturday, this Saturday, November 7th, for a special evening, a nice show with Paul Anka. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you. It's good to be there. Look forward to coming back. We have a good time every time we come down there.
Absolutely. What can, if people, let's say they're listening to this right now and they say, oh, I want to run out and, you know, I want to get a ticket. What can they expect to hear? All the old hits?
Well, you're going to get an eclectic array of stuff. You know, there's over 50 years of stuff, and we never retire songs, but we always try to keep in mind the audience. We do our homework. You know, this tour has been kind of different. We're going to wind up in Singapore, but as we look at when we come down there Saturday, I like to get a demographic read. So it's going to be some of the old, but not a lot. It's going to be new stuff. It's going to be my way. It's going to be some video presentation. We got a hot band, a lot of new arrangements, and it'll be, you know, a few surprises here and there.
Nice. Yeah, you mentioned My Way, and I do want to get into some of your hits that everyone recognizes you for, you know, Diana and Puppy Love and all the rest. But
sure.
But first, you know, what a lot of people probably don't realize, maybe more casual music fans, was that you wrote so many songs for, you know, big hits for other people. Tell me about you when you wrote the lyrics for My Way, which everyone remembers for Sinatra, but those were your words.
Right. Well, what happened really, when I got lucky as a kid, you know, I was writing kid songs. Pop music was in its infancy stage, and I was hopefully writing the way every teenager thought, indigenous to that world. And it evolved from that to where I realized after about a year in the business that to separate yourself from the others in a business that would change, you needed the gravitas of, you know, being the producer, being the writer, so that you had something to fall back on. Thus, you know, I worked at a local newspaper. I had a writing talent. So I really worked at that. And what I started doing at a young age, you know, Buddy Holly, who was my friend, I wrote It Doesn't Matter Anymore for him. And I wrote for Connie Francis and The Longest Day and The Tonight Show Theme. And I started to establish myself as a writer, which I felt was very, very important. And through the years, you know, after I met the Beatles in Europe and then my agent went and brought them over here, everything changed. We were thrown off the radio in a sense. But because I was the writer, I survived it. You know, I was recording in Italian and German and having hits over here still. And that evolved into, at a young age, being the only guy that was kind of asked to come out to Vegas by the boys and work with the Rat Pack, where I got a lot of my training in a very natural form, you know, no technology. Thus, knowing Sinatra as I did all those years, when I met up with him in Florida where I was working, he told me he was quitting show business. It was a huge shock to me and many others. And that he was doing just one more album, and he was doing it with my producer, Don Costa, who I introduced him to.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was I was just moved by the fact that he was quitting. I'd never written for him, even though he had asked me, but I was scared to death. You know, who knows what he would have done if I gave him something he didn't like. So I came back to New York, and I wrote it in 6 hours and flew it to Vegas and gave it to him. You know, I was old enough at 28 to write it, but I was too young to sing it, and that was my feeling. I didn't think that it was appropriate for someone in their 20s, not that you couldn't equate with it, but that you needed somebody of some vintage, as he was, that was kind of wrapping it up.
Right, because the lyrics are very much, you know, hindsight, looking back, I've done it all kind of a thing, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
No, that's awesome. So,
right.
So do you remember, I mean, I think this year marks his centennial, actually, I think, because
this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the big one, and there's celebrations, in a sense, around the world. It'll culminate here in December, obviously, and it's a lot of it's tied to My Way. And this is the key year to a great artist, an amazing artist and stylist and, you know, someone who I thought there was nobody like. And that's why I got involved in the Michael Bublé life when I sat with him and realized that he could continue that music, not emulate Sinatra. And that's why I produced the first album and got Michael going with my friends David Foster and to carry on that important part of the American songbook.
Yeah, definitely. Did Sinatra ever, you know, is there a point where they ever sort of thank you, or Tom Jones with She's a Lady, or anything like that? Do they ever after you and say,
yeah,
man?
They were always very gracious, you know, in embracing what I did. You know, it was such a big hit for Sinatra. He came back 2 years later because it was a hit and said, write me another one. And I wrote Let Me Try Again, which was the follow-up to it. And Tom was, you know, I spent a lot of time with him and knew him, and he asked me to write, and I wrote it. And they were always very acknowledging and very gracious in terms of my contribution to whatever it was, and that's pretty much all I needed, you know.
That's awesome. All right, well, we've talked about what you've done for other people, but let's talk about your stuff too, which I'm sure we'll hear some more of that on Saturday as well. But take me back to let's do Diana. Let's start with that. What do you remember? Was there a time where you were sort of maybe riding around in the car when you first heard that on the radio and you were like, man, I'm a star?
I didn't think it was a star. I just couldn't believe it. You know, I was a kid. As I said, pop music was really in its infancy stage, and it was overwhelming because there really wasn't a lot of others. You know, that Philadelphia crowd came a tad later. But when I first heard it on the radio, it's, you know, today we're all kind of jaded, and these kids today are jaded, and they're on these shows, and, you know, before they burp, they've made $50 million, and they can't really handle it. You know, back then, you got a great family around you. Nobody was really picking up on us, Presley and all of us, other than our little fan base. But when you hear it on the radio, driving around or whatever, hey, it's a jolt. You know, it's, wow, I can't believe this. And you're very appreciative of it because it was new. It was new to everybody, kids so young making it. You know, unlike today, every time you turn around, it's on television. There's a contest in every shopping mall. I mean, you're dealing with a whole different moving part and dynamic. But it was very moving back then. I was very, very moved by it.
Definitely. And then moving forward after that, I'm pretty sure then you hit number one. I mean, you had a bunch of other hits in between, but your next huge, huge number one was Lonely Boy, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, it was all kind of indigenous to the lifestyle that I had. You know, I was all of a sudden thrown into this life. I was traveling all over the world, playing to thousands of people, stadiums, all that stuff. And then I'd go right back to my room because I couldn't leave. They were outside your you know, they're outside your hotel, they're at airports, and you're all by yourself. You know, you're alone. And it kind of hit home to me, whether it was conscious or subliminal. And it came out in terms of Lonely Boy, which really, you know, everything I was writing, my crowd, that young demographic, could identify with what I was saying. And, you know, I would pick up those bits and pieces when I would sit with fans and see what their life was about. So Lonely Boy was very much about life that I was living, and it hit home with a lot of guys, frankly.
Right. And then obviously, probably my personal favorite, probably one of the greatest love songs ever, Put Your Head on My Shoulder.
Yeah, that was my favorite, too, actually.
Oh, really?
If you ask me of all the 50 stuff, you know, that was the turning point for me as a writer in the construction of the song. It was very poignant for me, because back then, you know, disc jockeys were your buddies, and you'd go to events for them, you do favors, and, you know, you're standing on a stage at some, you know, sock hop or a high school, and back then it was a whole big thing just to hold a girl. You know, there's no stuff going on today. So that the whole thing was to get a head on a shoulder, whether it was in the movie house or on a gymnasium floor, and I would notice it, you know. And
so risque.
Okay. And it just hit me as I watched it, and I went home to the hotel one night, and I just nailed it. And I think I called Annette, who I was dating at the time, and may she rest in peace. And I said, geez, I've just written this great song, because I'd written Puppy Love for her and I. But when I wrote that, I called her and I sang it to her over the phone, and it was a real turning point song. And my friend Bobby Darin, he and I were really close, and, you know, we were always vying, as friendly as we were, for the charts. And, you know, he beat me out of number one with Mac the Knife, so that was another compounded effect of that song.
Oh, is Put Your Head on My Shoulder the one that finally got back at him after Mac the Knife?
It was at the same time. We were like number one on a lot of charts together. And I think it was number one, number two, number two, number one. Yeah.
That dastardly Bobby Darin always taking my top spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Man,
you know, he and I were like, we felt the change coming, and it was always a concern with me because I figured it wasn't going to really last, because you knew evolution of life and what have you.
Sure.
And that's why we kind of aimed ourselves at that whole swing vibe. You know, there was no Hendrix yet, which is one of my favorite album experience. But prior to all that, it was about the Rat Pack. And when I got the call to go join that group out there at 2021, it was just a big turning point for me. And Bobby also started in New York, but I was the youngest to really make that evolution into that. That's kind of what saved me, because all my chops as an entertainer, I learned from those guys.
Wow, yeah. Well, I mean, what sort of things do you think specifically did you learn from them? What is it, just how to carry yourself, how a certain swagger, how to deal with publicity?
It was all that. It was, you know, it's mileage. It's like anything. I mean, what you do, for instance, you know, you remember those first few hours when you start, you get to do the do, and you get to do the miles, because none of us in life, you know, is successful in what you're doing, what I'm doing. None of us are born sophisticated. You're given this gift or this talent. But when success comes, you're sitting there most of the time saying, geez, how do I deal with this, you know?
Right.
And you got to find your own vibe and find your own place and find your own rhythm and your own comfort. And you're crawling along this journey of success, and then one day you hope to be wise enough to make the right decisions and get the miles under you to feel comfortable in what you do with a passion. So that's what happened to me with them. I just watched them. I was... You know, you have to do something and continue to do it. So I'm on that stage in front of that crowd and, you know, a mob-driven kind of entity. And you learn the swagger. You learn what not to do technically, because you have to remember there's no technology. I mean, today these kids go in, I don't know who the hell's singing, let alone on stage.
Right.
But back then it was one mic in front of the band, and you got a mic, and you better be good. That's it. I mean, nothing's going to save you. And you learn, and you learn, and you do the mileage. You do two shows a night for 6 weeks in a row. You know, half these kids couldn't handle two shows in a row,
right,
unless they're lip syncing, which most of them are, you know.
Yeah, what do you think, speak to that a little bit. What do you think of, you know, the importance of being able to write songs like you did, but also perform and actually perform on the stage? You know, have we lost a little bit of that? I mean, obviously there's some new artists that still do it. It's not a blanket statement, but you know,
yeah.
Like, have we lost the, have some of today's stars lost the craft of actually being able to write their own songs?
No, I think you when you look at it proportionately, you know, when I first met the Beatles, they said, you know, we want to do what you're doing. You write your own stuff, produce your own stuff. And that whole trend started around the Beatles and British Invasion. You know, there were a couple out there that wrote their stuff pretty much the rhythm and blues acts. But, you know, today, you know, there's some talented people out there. I mean, you look at Adele, you know, her contribution, which is very, very true and very organic and good. Even Sting and Elton John. There's a host of people making great music. You know, they're not up there lip syncing it, et cetera. And I don't, you know, I'm not sitting around knocking fellow artists. I don't do that. But it's not my thing where the consumer, you know, is buying, you know, a CD and then wants to get the live vibe when they go to a show. And you're restricted when you're doing that because it's not really true emotion. You're just kind of a prisoner to what you're hearing. But when you get down to it, you look at the great artists that are out there, and you look at these, even a lot of young artists, they're writing good songs and well-constructed, and they're out there, and they've learned from the best. You know, they've done their homework.
Yeah,
and they've created it, and it's home for them, and that's what's important. I can't really say that there's, you know, you listen to a Coldplay album, you know, as a producer, I listen to it, and it's perfect. You know, there's a lot of stuff in that production that I love, and how it's done, and well produced, et cetera. And the list could go on. And there's a lot of garbage out there that I don't, you know, ear candy. That, you know, God bless them, the technology's created them. You know, they come to me, say, can you give me some advice? I say, yeah, learn to be an accountant, because they're going to be gone, you know?
Right.
And that's okay. They get a shot, they make some money, and blah, blah, blah. But the true artists will continue to sustain themselves, and they're out there. They're definitely out there.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of them. And those are the ones that last. They really do.
Without doubt. Yeah.
And but it's fascinating to me that, you know, here you are, this really talented songwriter, but you could also tapped into sort of the young imagination, you know, even people that you don't have to know a lot about, you know, the art of music, but you still, with, let's say, like something like Puppy Love, how did you sort of tap into what young minds were craving?
Well, that was pretty obvious. You know, you got to remember, you look at the whole sociological situation in this country, not Europe, which was far advanced. You know, there's so many taboos. I mean, you know, here I am, with a bunch of, you know, great rock and roll stars going from city to city. You couldn't bring the girls to the hotel, and, you know, the whole system and where we were at in this country in sexuality, as you know, it was a pretty shut down window. And,
right,
you know, when you'd hang with fans, and, you know, I love da-da-da-da, that my mommy won't go to the theater, and I went through it. You know, I'd get a date, and then I'd go to the theater, and you just want to get your arm around and maybe inside the sweater, you know, if you're lucky. But everybody was educated on the fact that you don't do this, you don't do that, and you're too young, and it's just a puppy love. And I said, oh, you know, bells go off. And what I did was I just sat down and wrote about it, and part of the experience was Annette. yeah. you know, who was a Disney property and very popular, and she and I were very close, and they didn't want us close. I kept hearing Mr. Disney doesn't want you near him, and it's a puppy love, and blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, right. let's take the lemons and make lemonade. So I wrote puppy love.
Awesome. Oh, that's so cool. And, you know, we mentioned that, you know, a lot of people don't know a lot that you yourself wrote some of these songs for other people, but a lot of people yeah. also don't know that your daughter, Amanda, is married to Jason Bateman. That's a fun,
yeah.
that's a fun little trivia fact we stumbled upon.
Well, he's a, you know, I spoke to him yesterday because he's a huge baseball nut, you know, and there's right. some great baseball, obviously, and I think the right team won.
It just ended, yeah, great... World Series last night, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's a great guy, and he's very talented, and, you know, my kids are very important to me, and, you know, you're as happy as your unhappiest child, and they're in a great groove, and he's just a talented guy, and all my son-in-laws are very cool, but, you know, he's somebody I see because he lives in L.A., the rest live in Europe, and they just had another little baby, so they got two kids. In fact, I'm taking one of them to Hawaii for Christmas. So
nice.
It's good. The good thing is he's not affected by it all. And he's very talented and he's going to go on and do some great stuff.
Right. Definitely. Well, you know, you've done it all and now you're sort of at this point where you can sort of back, you know, look back and say, sing my way and have that gravitas you were talking about that you said you didn't think you had back when you wrote it. So now when you get to sing something like that and you look back yeah. over your career, Are you just blown away at the success, or does it feel sort of like, you know, you had your song, You Are My Destiny? Does it feel like this, you were destined to do this?
Well, I certainly felt at an early age that, you know, I was destined to do it, or, you know, gifted to do it. I didn't know how long it would last. And, you know, I live a regular life away from it, and that's what's kept me kind of sane, frankly. I didn't really absorb a lot of the bad habits of my Vegas crowd.
The work-life balance.
Yes, and balances everything. So, you know, when I'm on stage now, the comfort zone and the kind of emotional triggers are different. You know, I am older, and I'm at a certain journey of life where I've, you know, I'm very much in touch with my body, and I think everything brain-driven, you sit there and go, damn, I'm still doing this, and look at this audience.
Right.
You know, whether I'm here, I'm over in Europe, I'm going to Asia, go to South America. Look at what they're reacting and how they're reacting, and you know how I'm personally in touch with myself to feel a different emotion. Looking at faces that were 16, 17, and 18, and now depending where I am, they're in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and you know, saying to myself, "Jesus, I got 8 more hours of songs I can do, but 2 hours is enough." And my way's hitting me differently than when I stood up at 28, 29, 30, just saying, oh, well, I wrote it for Frank, and, you know, I'm just doing it. You know, I'm doing it now for him and for me, and there's a lot of equation that goes on, you know, but, you know, very lethargic at some point, you know, when you sit there and say, again. but it works, you know, and I do it because you're kind of addicted to it, because every time you think, well, I'll do nothing, you get very much afraid, because anyone that I've socialized with or know in any business, frankly, not only mine, even Sinatra, you know, I go back to him sitting there with electric trains and flowers. I'm going, what's this? You know, I don't want to be there doing that. You know, I want to keep doing it because we've got an audience. It's moving me differently.
Yeah.
You know, my sense of delivery is different and my audience's reaction is different. And we do X amount of days a year all over the world, and it's just something you can't give up if you've got a passion for it.
Definitely. And speaking of those lyrics that you keep coming back to and mentioning, are there, looking back, are there times you bit off more than you can chew, or regrets you have a few?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, listen, life isn't one straight line. You know, everybody's got their garbage every day, you know, loosely I say that. But no. There absolutely are. I think the big key is the less mistakes that you make and what you learn from them, because life just goes on that way. It's how you handle it. Do you have the backbone?
Yeah.
And I throw away my rearview mirror. I mean, I can't live in the past. I look at, you know, how grateful I am for all this good stuff. And, you know, you take those chances. My biggest regret was, I thought, would be Rock Swings, which was a big album for me a few years ago on the heels of the Buble, you know, where I took all these rock songs and just made them my own and said, this is either going to destroy me or get me a new audience, and put a lot of money into the authenticity and the integrity of it, down to the microphones, the band, and we pulled it off. But that was one regret that I thought, you know, when I produced it, I produced it for critics and DJs, because, you know, they really know and get it. If you gave them something good, they're not going to turn on it, because they're going to not be able to look in the mirror about it, you know.
Definitely. Well, you ate it up and spit it out. So what would be your way? If it's my way, you know, you wrote it many years ago. Now you've had a lot of time to reflect on it, and you keep singing about it. And Saturday, when you say those words and people are sitting in the theater at Strathmore and they hear you sing that, what's sort of that takeaway? What is your way?
Well, my way today is just really never letting go of the integrity. Mm-hmm. You know, my way today is being very truthful to yourself and keeping the integrity of what you're doing all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how I look at everything. I want transparency, and I want honesty, and because the world is just in a different tilt today. And I've been around it for a lot of years, and I'm very concerned as to the state of it. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to get drawn into anything that becomes compromising or dangerous in any way, because it's all potentially there. You know, this is a great country, and I come back to it from all these trips. But right now, we have a lot of challenges. So my way, you know, I would hope would spill over to others, to where they would keep the honesty, the transparency, the integrity of what they're doing, you know, for the betterment of making a difference. So, you know, I've done this a long time. I've been successful at it. And, you know, to me, my way is to do it the right way and not compromise or let people talk you into stuff that's kind of devious.
Awesome. That's a great message, and I think it's a perfect spot to leave it. So, Paul Anka, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, and I hope everyone hearing this heads out to the Strathmore to see your show. I mean, it's a chance to see a legend, if I must say so. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And come on out, gang, because we've really got a great orchestra, and we've got a lot of good stuff, and we're looking forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good questions. Good interview.
Oh, better answers.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. Appreciate that.
That's Paul Anka on WTOP, everybody.